I just want to state that the difference between Jerry Schatzkes and myself is as follows. Jerry's a little younger, but he starts the night young, and as the night wears on, he's going to get more tired. And in the Yiddish that his father did not teach him, he's going to say, was played in there without Alain. So Jerry, when that happens, you give me the signal. I need it. I'm the opposite. I'm a senior citizen, but once I get started with a lecture like this, I can go and throw the Haggadah, Maisa B'nei Brak, or they have to tell them it's not the Dabi Shachas. I mean, we'll go to Kadosh Baruch on that. Today's lecture is a bit different. It's really Rabbi Hirsch and the development of World War III. And in the development of World War III, you're all going to recognize the problems that you have. I don't have, because I live in a different world, and I know my boundaries. But you have, and many others have. Okay, Reb Simcha Folkiewicz, one of the most fascinating individuals that has lived, one of the people who did so much for Torah. And tragically, this man died feeling his efforts were not appreciated, and that he had failed. And it's a wonderful biography by a great-grandson, one of the few biographies by Oscar that has mistakes, but only a few. And his great-grandson writes how his great-grandfather died of failure. Now, to put it into context, his years are 1808 to 1888. And he already was born after the Enlightenment. In other words, if we talk about 1808, Mendelssohn was dead already, and the Enlightenment had spread. It's all over Western Europe. It's touching upon Central Europe. And he grew up already with two great rebbeim who combined Torah and the enlightened world. He studied with Yitzchak Bernays, who was the Rav of Hamburg, and he called himself Chacham Yitzchak Bernays. The fact that he called himself Chacham should reveal something to you. He wanted two calls to be Rabbi of Chacham. The Sfardim, exactly. The Sfardim at that time were Spanish Portuguese, they were very educated, high class, and the Ashkenazim, who wanted to show their high class, Chacham, not Rabbi. That was one influence on him. Then he went to the yeshiva in Mannheim, Rabbi Yaakov Ettinger, the author of the Orach LaNer, and Rabbi Yaakov Ettinger already had college degrees. And he already was a Rosh Yeshiva, but enlightened, broad-minded. The story is told that a Litvish Rosh Yeshiva was traveling, came to Mannheim. You heard the story in the documentary. I don't believe the documentary, even though Professor Yitzchak Plessy is quoted to me as being the source of the story. I don't believe it's true. I think that this is the original story. It's apocryphal, but this is what I heard it 60 years ago. That the Rosh Yeshiva came into Rabbi Yaakov Ettinger's yeshiva, said, Rebbe, we all wonder about you. You waste so much time studying Greek and Latin, mathematics. Where do you have time to be such a gaon in Torah? And Rabbi Yaakov Ettinger answered, the time that you wonder about me is the time I study Greek, Latin, and mathematics. So, you see, Rav Hirsch was exposed to what I will say for the sake of being understood, dual culture. Went into the rabbinate. What's amazing, he himself was not a college graduate. He spent 1 year at the University of Bonn. He never matriculated, as they say. He never went beyond that initial year. He went into the rabbinate, and he worked his way up. He achieved a high position. As I mentioned in my initial lecture on the whole problem of limud, and I spoke about relations with Orthodox, non-Orthodox, Rav Hirsch was in Prussia. It was an organized rabbinate, and he became what is the equivalent of a chief rabbi it actually was Oldenburg out of Moravia, and he could have been the happiest man alive. But people go through a midlife crisis, particularly men, for reasons that are not happy. I once researched this thoroughly because I saw people reach the age of 45, 50, and terrible things happen occasionally. It's called the midlife crisis. It generally happens in the spring. I don't know, if I start lecturing on it, forget about Rafish. He went through a midlife crisis. The man who's the happiest guy alive. Frankfurt turned to him. They didn't even have a minyan Shomer Shabbos. Totally captured by the reform, the great city of Frankfurt am Main, and they asked him to become the rabbi. And Rav Hirsch came into Frankfurt. I'm quoting from Rav Hirsch now, his memoir literature. He said the mikveh was located in an alleyway that was, I quote, that was not fit for the passage of swine, end quote. And let me tell you, I know what this means. I often told my students, I once heard the Rav, my Rebbe had a good sense of humor. So it must be in the mid-50s, he mentioned in a public shiur, he said, you want to judge a housewife if she's a balabasta? Take a look at the state of the lavatory. What you call the bathroom, the toilet, we called it a lavatory. That the dining room looks nice, that the living room looks nice, that says nothing. Check the lavatory. I applied that to my thought. If you want to know the state of a community and how they feel about religion, take a look the way their mikveh is. What state is it in? And in Frankfurt, I'm quoting Rav Hirsch. And he began, he went to work. He was a fabulous speaker, a very prolific author. Rav Hirsch left us. First of all, he was a polemicist. He had a journal, Yeshurun. Every issue he contributed, he fought the reform tooth and nail. He fought the reform in their language. He showed that he knew as much science and mathematics and literature as they did. But it doesn't mean he licensed to not be a religious Jew. All of these polemics are collected in 7 volumes of what's called Gesammelte Schriften, collected writings. And believe it or not, today there is a full English translation of all these volumes. Let me pay tribute to the London community, Dayan Isidor Grunfeld, Zeichet Tzadik Livracha, was the first one to translate many of these essays, and he put out 2 volumes entitled Judaism Eternal, Sansino Press. Did a fabulous job. Rav Hirsch, and this became a popular genre of literature in the Baal Tshuva movement today. Who has questions? Older people don't ask questions, generally speaking. They're involved in the big world, they have to make money, they have a wife, and they have children. No time to question. But a high school youngster, a person in college, he asked questions. And Rav Hirsch came up with what's called the 19 letters, Igrot, Beruziel. What a volume, correspondence between the Rebbe and his Talmud. And all the questions that a young man will ask 200 years ago, 100 years ago, today, and 100 years from now, as long as we have Western culture, those questions are in there. Who is a Jew? Why a Jew? Why are we different? Why can't we assimilate among the nations? What's the purpose of doing this stuff? And fabulous. This volume was translated into English for the first time in 1898 by Rabbi Bernard Drachman, who had been sent to Germany to study for the Reform Rabbinate. The Reform movement paid for him because they wanted him to have a proper ordination and be a great before rabbi. He was born in Newark, Bernard Draftman, and he went to Germany, and traveling Pesach time, he went from Germany to Poland to visit Poland, and in the inn that he stayed, he saw Pelische Hasidische Yidden, that the Reform had told him these Jews are worthless, they're sick, they're backward, they're primitive, they're barbarians, they're dinosaurs. And he described in his memoir, An Unfailing Light, how when they benched, their kavanah was greater than any kavanah he saw in a Reform temple on Yom Kippur. And he came back to America, ordained, but a Torah Jew. He went on to a very important career in the American Torah rabbinate. He translated 19 letters, 1898. Subsequently, there have been two more translations, one by Abroya, one by Oxford, and it's a fabulous volume. I personally owe a great debt to the volume because I once asked my mother-in-law, remember, my wife's family arrived in America in 1870. She has great-great-grandparents buried in Queens. And once asked my mother-in-law, Zichrona Livracha, who was born at the turn of the last century, how did you remake from? I mean, so many kids grew up in Brooklyn and you saw the finest homes and you know what happened to them? And she told me in high school, she read the 19 letters. And that volume by Rav Hirsch changed her life and gave her the strength to keep her commitment and not let anyone mock her and decry her beliefs. That was only one. He wrote Korev. Here you have Dan Bloomfield's magnificent translation of Korev and the introduction that he wrote, where Rav Hirsch deals with all the mitzvot and their purpose. Of course, his commentary on the Chumash is second to none. It was translated once by a dentist in London. Give me the name. Yitzchak Levy. His son davened three seats from me in Oda Rivka. His daughter was my student. His grandmother was my student in Mechala. You hit the nail on the head. The only problem with his translation is his native language was not English. It was German. So it's German. How do you write German? If you ever saw my Rebbe's Hebrew in Ish Halakha, it's Germanic Hebrew. He runs on. In German, you write 50 words as a sentence. In English, you write 6-7 words. I'm Popak. My first book was published by JPS, Jewish Publication Society. I'm Popak was the editor. He taught me, don't be ashamed to break up your sentences. Good English. The shorter the sentences, the better. Today, this past year or two, a new translation came out of the Chumash, which is by a native English speaker, so it's on a higher level as far as English goes, but he leans and stands on the shoulders of Yitzchak Levy. So he was a prolific writer. He organized the school system, a very interesting school system, in which he dealt with the problem that we dealt with Saturday night, the problem that I have to deal with almost on a weekly basis with questions I get from my students out in the rabbinate. Co-education. And this is a real problem. What do we do for education? And remember, we have a world where, thank God, paraphrasing the Gemara in Sanhedrin and the Gemara in Yuma, thank God we had men and women. Without having men and women, none of us would be sitting here. I hope we recognize that. So it's very, very important that men and women should know how to relate to each other, to respect each other. And yet, how can you have mixed classes? I don't believe it's possible to deal with certain passages in the Chumash, certain passages in the Mishnah, to deal with certain passages in the Gemara. I don't think it's possible, in my opinion, to teach a co-ed class. So Rav Hirsch developed a system where you had men and women, boys and girls separate, but the buildings were on one campus in proximity to each other. And his viewpoint was, to me, outstanding. Let the boys and girls talk to each other, coming to school, going from school. The classes themselves were separate. If you want to see it, it continues today in Washington Heights. As far as I know, they have never changed it. It's one campus, separate buildings. Yerushalayim, when I came in Aliyah, and almost all my, all my children and many of my grandchildren went to Chorev or are going to Chorev, which is the continuation of Akirshiv's school system in Israel. The younger grades are in one campus, two separate buildings, but in close proximity to each other. It's only at high school that you have two separate campuses, one in Yeshiva Tichonit, on one end of Jerusalem, right near where Intel is and all the demonstrations are taking place today, and the other one is directly next to Gruss. Literally, the next campus next to Yeshiva University is the Weingarten High School for Girls, which is Chorev. So that was his shita, and it caught on the educational system, the teachers. There, too, we had an interesting viewpoint. To Rav Hirsch, general studies were no different than religious studies. A person had to feel God's presence in whatever he studied. There was no dichotomy. There was no chasm between the two. As a result, it was either religious Jews teaching math and science or non-Jews. He would not allow a Jew who was not religious to teach in his school system. It's very important because it plays a big role in what's happening in the world today, as we will see by Thursday. The man, there was so much genius here. And if you read his writings, and once again I have to give credit to London, two people wrote about Rav Hirsch after World War II. They are two fabulous volumes. One of them is The History of Orthodoxy in Germany by Hermann Schwab. That came out in 1948 in London. Some of you may know the family. It's part of the family where Rabbi Shimon Schwab winds up in New York. The other volume was, of course, in 1954 by Diane Isidore Grunfeld, the magnificent volume, Three Generations, where he gives you a summary of Rav Hirsch's viewpoint, his followers, his impact. And Rav Hirsch was unbelievably successful. Where he felt he failed, and this takes us into my opening lecture here when I was in Greenhorn, in London, a week and a half ago. Today already I know how to use the tubes, so I'm no longer a greenhorn. But I see some of you are like in New York. In New York, when you sit down with your friends, they start counting out, I'll get on the subway in 25 years. That's nothing. I've been on the subway in 30 years, and I'm sitting there, poor schnook. Without the subway, I can't get around. So I hear here too, people are telling me I've been on the underground 20 years, 80 years, 11. Each one is giving me a different figure. Where did he fail? And if you recall, this is a tremendous problem. I don't want to go into it again, but I just want to stress the problem and show you Rav Hirsch's thinking. If I teach in Limud, and I'm fully aware that many of the people in Yeshiva University, Rabbi Lam, Rabbi, people identified with Yeshiva University, Rabbi Riskin, perhaps others, Rabbi Luxting, they all said to me, Aaron, we have a chance to teach Torah to Jews that never heard the message. Why should we pass it up? It's a very valid argument. I'm not here to say they're wrong, but I explained, I have a different point of view. If I teach in Lima, so I'm giving one class, you're giving another class, and you're giving another class. This one is a Reform rabbi, this one is a conservative rabbi, this class is given by a woman, pardon me, who's a lesbian, who's not even Jewish because only her father is Jewish, patrilineal, and she's recognized by the Supreme Court of London and by the Reform movement as a Jew, and I'm the little orthodox guy. So you're ipso facto making a statement, pluralism, you have choice. And this to me is a real problem. As I explained, my eyes were burned once, and I don't want to go through it again. Once the OU called me to have slot for a rabbi at the time of a world conference of Jews and in Jerusalem, an Orthodox rabbi in a beautiful hotel for Shabbos. My wife said yes immediately, which I don't blame her. And I went, and Shabbos was November. Shabbos in Yerushalayim, November begins like a little later than you. It began at 4 o'clock, Nich mentioned 4:10, and supper is 7 o'clock. So I look around, no Orthodox minion, a little minion of the hotel, a Sfadik minion, I'm going to come to Shabbos today. Fine. Sat in the hallway where there's light. I didn't want to leave the light on in our room. We had to sleep. Sat with my Gemara. I learned until 7 o'clock. Malk and I are going downstairs to the dining room, and we're passing the Reform service. And we peek in, and 300 women are lighting Shabbos candles 3 hours after Shabbos began, led by their Reform rabbi, who looks like a rabbi. It could I see our shakers. Right or wrong, be honest, fine. And believe me, when I finish teaching, I go back to being an ordinary little kid from the Bronx. But this guy had a beard, a tiki pasuka, a guy, gama, a nash, a Christian, my God, some of them. And I can't do it. Rav Hirsch raised the banner of Auschwitz. We can have nothing to do with Reform and Conservative. At that time, it was what you call the historic school and the Reform school. Again, it's all these are topics of fascination, but it's not for now. But in Germany, religion was government supported, so you had to have a Gemeinde. The Germans were smart. Why did they have to get involved with who's a Jew and who's not a Jew? They were smarter than the people who lived in the Supreme Court of London. They said, you form a community, tell us how many Jews belong, and we'll give you per Jew 200 mark a year. We give you religious service like we give you health, like we give you a police force. It's like Australia. It's like, I understand here too, your day schools. It's not like America. In America, if a person has 5 children and he's making under $500,000 a year, he's a pauper. He has to come around Sunday morning here collecting, going from million to million. Because in America, 5 children means tuition. You're talking a year, elementary school, high school, you're talking $150,000 a year, shoes, membership, and food on your table, cars, a house, and all that goes with it, and keeping up with the Goldbergs. Under $500,000, you are a pauper with a capital P. So Germany was not like America. You had to have a Gemeinde. Hirsch worked incessantly for the community, for the Parliament of Prussia, to pass a law that was called the Secession Law. In German, it's called Austritt, to walk out. Aus, tritt, your foot, you're walking out. Austritt. We can have a separate community. Frankfurt can have a general Gemeinde and a Torah Gemeinde. And 1876, it's passed. Rav Hirsch gives a psak, everyone has to leave. Lo and behold, the same year, the greatest old-time Talmud Chacham in Germany, from the old school, without college, without this type of educational thrust, the Witzberg Rav, Reb Yitzchak Dov Bamberger, or Zelikman Bamberger, I taught his great-great-grandchildren over the years, gave a psak. If the general Gemeinde gives you what you need, a mikvah, a shul, a mechitza, a Talmud Torah, doesn't interfere, you don't have to leave the general community. That which binds us is more than that which divides us. Well, Rav Hirsch struggled. And what was even worse, in his own community in Frankfurt, the majority did not oust it. did not work out. If I can mention a name to you who is more famous than Jacob Rosenheim, Yaakov Rosenheim, could this has the same note? You tell me, Moreno Harav Rav Yaakov Rosenheim. It's the only honorary snifer I know of. He was given honorary snifer signed by the Chafetz Chaim and signed by the Chaim Moshe Grzynski. For all he did, he was the man who put our religious girl on the map. The Chassidish Rebbeim of the Litvish Rosh Yeshiva needed a Yega to organize them. No, I'm serious, to put them on the map. What do you want? A Yega doesn't know anything but to be punctilious and knows to be utilitarian and pragmatic. A Litvish Rosh Yeshiva, you lock him in a paper bag, he probably couldn't find his way out. Siddiq Rebbe is too late to find his way out. His clock doesn't work properly. The option of it makes Abdullah Sunday morning. You're going to explain that. But Yaakov Rosenheim, he grew up on the lap of Rav Hirsch. His own father didn't need to ask him. Rav Hirsch Steinberg was really broken hearted. You know why they didn't do Auschwitz? I never understood it. Later, when I studied German Orthodoxy more and more, I learned the answer. It's a very simple answer. My dear friends, what was very precious to a Jew is the cemetery. Cemetery in Germany, your whole family is buried there. 200 years ago, 100 years ago, you want to be buried near your forebears. We don't have that concept today because we are all greenwashed. I'm in America. My grandparents are buried there. My father's buried in Israel. My great-grandparents, God knows what Hitler did to them. No, we don't have that concept. I think in London, most of you are not here more than 2-3 generations. But in Germany, this concept is very strong. The cemeteries belong to the Gemeinde. If you did Auschwitz, you lost your place in the cemetery. Of course, the separatist community bought a new cemetery, consecrated a new cemetery. But you didn't want to be the first of your family when your great-grandparents are buried elsewhere, etc. And that's why they didn't commit Auschwitz. But the legacy of Rav Hirsch is overwhelming. The man turned around Torah in Germany. Now, this was the plus. The minus is something we struggle with until today. All of us live in two worlds. Okay? And I'll give you a simple example in one moment. I just want to tell you, Rav Hirsch's great-grandson did a brilliant, I believe it was his doctorate, if not, it was right after his doctorate, Professor Mordechai Breuer, the Yukna Shel Eidah, was published by Columbia University in English translation. I had a choice of buying it for $50 from Columbia or for $10 in Hebrew in Israel. Believe me, I bought the Hebrew one for $10. I happen to read both languages so interchangeably that I closed that up in front of an Anglo audience and said, oh, this article just appeared in Jerusalem Post. And everyone comes to me a day or two that, really, it's not there. So I looked, I said, it can't be. I read it in Yedioth, not in the Post, but when you don't pay attention to the language. Anyway, it's a fabulous finding. And he shows all the problems because they were totally at home, just like you're totally at home in British culture. I'm fairly at home. When I always marvel, when I get off the plane in New York, the first thing the summertime, the first thing I ask my students, how are the Yankees doing? What the heck do I care about the Yankees? But you were raised, you have a childhood, you have happy memories, Yankee Stadium. We live in two cultures. I'd like to ask you a simple question. Don't answer me. Just think about it. How many of you went out New Year's Eve? That was the right time to make a bracha. How many of you went out New Year's Eve? In Germany? many people would have. You see, it's hard to say. It's a secular holiday, but it's a religious holiday. But we're Germans. We're celebrating it the Neue Jahr. It's a new year. We all count in two languages. The Gemara counts in two languages. Rosh Hashanah and Malachim and the whole Kabbalah of Jewish kings, Gentile kings. So I'm not criticizing. There's a famous Ramban. I don't want to go into it now. A Pashut Bo. It's coming up very shortly. No, you go into the Ramban. You see, we have dual culture. I've given many shayurim on that Ramban. The Chacham Sofer takes it later. I take it from the Chacham Sofer, and I work my way into my students' hearts or into their tears or laughter. It depends what happens. Let me tell you a little story. Last Shavuot, I found myself on the Upper West Side of New York. So I was speaking, and whatever I had to do, I did. And a lot of Jews came out of the woodworks. They heard this song here, and he has a message, or whatever, you know, Baruch Hashem. I left them with a Michael Chazal, with a good Shia. So a famous German professor, the Offenbacher family, if you recognize the name, in the founder of Times. Times, do you know what Times is? So you have a laundry soap here called Times? Yes, sir, you don't even know. Oh my. Kais is in America, Kais is in Israel. It's a very famous detergent. He came up with Kais, Torah in the Derecheret Society. Cleanse your soul with Kais. So he was about a bus of mine in 1961. All right, I suffered a little from him. 50, 60, how many years later? 45? No, of 61, 209. Wow, figure out the mathematics. Almost a half century later, he was going crazy that he heard me give a drasha, he heard me touch up a Gemara, Rosh Hashanah. And he came, he said, you have to come up to my house for a drink. All right, the professor Offenbacher invites me for a drink. And we had a wonderful time, Esther and Elma, myself and Malka. So many memories. On his wall, he has a big picture out of the 50s, about 54, of who's who in American Orthodox. I don't want to mention the names because it's not complimentary. You couldn't believe I could identify. It's like a big hall, and they're sitting and feasting, and I see the head of the OU and the head of this, and I recognize, and all Yekkers who fabulous positions. Now with a twinkle in his eye, he almost says to me, you Rabbi, you know when this picture was taken? I say, must be a Sheva Brachas, a wedding, New Year's Eve. So you see, with all the accomplishments, this problem that all of us are living through culture is a problem, it's a question, we have to deal with it. But the reality is, we are living in two worlds. Now, this impacted upon a later development, and I'm touching upon topics that are overwhelming, but I have to be very brief because I want to bring you to World War III. And what I alluded to, I think it was last night, Rav Hirsch did not organize a yeshiva. The Germans would not accept the concept of a yeshiva at that time. They had one word for yeshiva, batlanish. What kind of business is this? It's not pragmatic, it's not utilitarian, a kid sits and learns. If you recall, I told your story about Lakewood last night with the policeman. This is not for us. Along came, that's real, came to Simon. He organized the Beis Medrash L'Rabbanim, the Berlin Rabbinical School for the Orthodoxische Judentum. And they turned out the rabbis. Germans, proud to be Germans, happy to be Germans. You couldn't get ordination without having a doctorate from a neighboring university. There wasn't one German rabbi who was not Rabbino Herr Doktor. It went with the title of being a rabbi. And it's amazing, and this was the development. But then came World War I. And once again, the German army marches into Poland, and there were many Jews fighting for Germany in World War I. And they came into Poland, and they conquer Poland, and 10% of Poland are Polish and Yidden, and they fall in love with them. And the German rabbis, who were part of the army, the chaplaincy, Rabbi, give me the most famous name of all, he reached the rank of colonel, Rabbi Dr. Joseph Kalbach, right or wrong, the dancing rabbi's uncle, Rabbi Dr. Leo Rosneck, his grandson, is, you recognize the name? Okay. His grandson is a big professor in Jerusalem in education. And when they came back to the seminary, there's a new spirit there. And the students start clamoring, we want East European Russian yeshiva. We don't want German professors. And by 1924, who becomes the head of the seminary? Rabbi Dr. Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. And if you understand Rabbi Weinberg, he never left being a Slavutny yeshiva student. On one hand, a world-class scientific scholar. On the other hand, he said time and again, you can't be a Talmud Chacham, you can't fear God, unless you learn in a Litvishi Yeshiva. And beginning by the mid-20s, the way Rabbi Soloveitchik came to Berlin, younger students are going from Berlin to Mir, Tels, Panovich. I had a regular Shmuel Leizavot, we spoke about him, I believe, Saturday night. I ran about it in my new book, I deal with the tragedy of Hitler, of the lives he destroyed that we don't start to understand. He killed 6 million, they're dead. But the survivors had to start all over again. You wind up a greenhorn in America, it's not too simple. And the folk, we once asked him, Rebbe, if you were so poor, how did you support yourself when you learned from Tells? Oh, I was rich in Tells. Why? All the Germans who knew nothing would hire me as a private rebbe, so that the German parents paid for homes so that their yingle who went to the yeshiva should have a rebbe to bring them up to a higher level. And the entire heritage of Rav Hirsch was now under question. And no one articulated it better than Rabbi Shimon Schwab, who later goes on to Washington Heights. And in the mid-30s, and you see this all in Dan Grunfeld's work, and I deal with it in my first work on the Red Rebbe, in the mid-30s, he asks a question of some great rabbanim. And the question is very succinct. I am a German, raised in a German family. Our tradition is to go to college. My parents are devotees of the viewpoint of Rav Shimshon Rafal, Hirsch, Kleist, and Tzadik for Kaddish Lebracha. And I want to know, am I allowed to go to college or is it forbidden for me? He wrote to the Gerer Rebbe, he never got an answer. At the Knesset Gedolah, which we also spoke about in the course of the lectures, in 1937, the World Conference of Agudat Israel, he went over to the great Gerer Rebbe, the Re'im, Rabbi Abraham Mordechai, the third Gerer Rebbe, the son of the Sfat Emet, and he said, Rebbe, did you get my letter? The Rebbe, I found it on the Rebbe, I didn't reply. Of course I got your letter. Why didn't you answer me? And the Rebbe says to him, how could I answer you? You can't say a bad word against Rav Hirsch as Gevan HaGaon HaTzadik. He was a Gaon HaTzadik. But it's totally forbidden to go to college. What kind of question is that? The one who wrote a long responsive was the Baruch Leibovich. It appears in Birchat Shmuel to Kedushin. It's pages 38 to 42 in the Birchat Shmuel. And he quotes the question, and he gives an answer, and he says, Bavadar is certainly the Gomer and Tzadik Rav Shimshon HaFurah Hirsch only permitted going to university as a Hora'at Sha'ah, as a ruling under the duress of the time. God forbid you should go to college. And he tells a story there. If anyone has heart trouble, please leave for 2 minutes. I don't want to be responsible. Are there doctors here? Do we have doctors in the audience? Let's start that way. Do we have that? No, I'm serious. I can't go further unless there has to be one doctor here. Mahavnish Ain doctor? What's going on here? What kind of Jews are you? In America, every time a Chacham is a doctor, and every doctor says, it's mind-boggling how many people are sitting in the hospitals among them, many of my students. In Israel, too. It's just amazing. My dear friends, in that Jew you will find the following. Rav Baruch Leibovich, who was a Balashin or a Talmud Ruach or a Chaim Vriska, says, my classmate, the great Rav Chaim Isaac Rezhinsky, the Rav of Vilna, told me the following story. He was standing next to Rav Chaim Vriska. This was during World War I, in the Vriska Beis Medrash, in Rav Chaim Shtibel in Brisk. And a kid comes in. Rav Chaim was sitting and learning all day, and you could bother him. A kid comes in, a teenage kid, he says, Rebbe, the war is on, I've been drafted, I'll be sent to fight, and you all know World War I was Sakhanat the Fasha, the amount of killing. They moved 1 inch and killed 10,000 people in the process. Sakhanat the Fasha. So he says, Rebbe, I got a chance to get a job in the American Embassy in Warsaw. If I work for the embassy, I'm exempt from the draft. But if I work for the embassy, I have to answer the telephone on Shabbos, I have to write on Shabbos. Rav Chaim told him, take the job, save your life, because nefesh negates, abrogates Shabbat. Fine. Kid walks out. 3 minutes later, another kid walks in, says, Rebbe, I've been drafted into the army, but if I go to gymnasium, they exempt you to finish the 5-year program because the Polish government wants their youngsters to be able to contribute to society, and you must have a gymnasium education. Rav Chaim tells him, Chas v'chalila, you have to go into the army. It's forbidden for you to go to gymnasium. So the kid walks out, and Rav Chaim Weizer turns to Rav Chaim Vriska and says, Rebbe, I don't understand. You got the same question 2 minutes ago, and you told the kid, take the job and be machal Shabbos, and now you got the question on gymnasium, and you told the kid, go into the army, into the front lines. So I said, what's the question? Of course, that's what you have to ask him. Chilul Shabbos is knocked down by pikuach nefesh, but to go to gymnasium and learn general studies and to become an old day of Avodah Zarah and not be kairos, that is not knocked out. It's one of the 3 cardinal sins. Yaharei v'al ya'avar. You have to give your life, the whole city in Sanhedrin, the Fanatifan Ben, etc., and not take a gymnasium exemption. So you see, a certain attitude is developing, and this is what the Baruch Hu writes to Rabbi Schwab to do. Rabbi Schwab never got a doctorate, you should know. I believe he did go to college ultimately, but never beyond. My dear friends, the Germans come to America. Rabbi Revel turns to the State Department and declares that he's hiring Rabbi Joseph Breuer of Frankfurt to teach Bible at Yeshiva College. He's a world expert in Bible. and therefore he qualifies for a non-quota immigrant visa. As you know, the doors of America were closed, just as Britain kept the doors of Palestine closed, and if you didn't get a non-quota visa immigrant certificate, you could not save your life. You were doomed. Rabbi Breuer comes to America. First thing he does, he goes to Yeshiva College. He thanks Rabbi Rebel for saving his life. Rabbi Rebel dies shortly thereafter. The Balabatim, who were there already, of German origins, among them my daughter's grandfather-in-law, Fred Stern, organized what becomes Kehilat Adat Yeshurun, KAJ, in Washington Heights. And Rabbi Breuer becomes one of the great post-World War II American success stories. Big Kehila, I mentioned the day school, organized beautiful mikveh. It's a magnet for those of German origins who survived. Washington Heights overflows. It's the other end, closer to the river, the Harlem River, I believe it's called, is Yeshiva University. And at the other end of Washington Heights, closer to the Hudson River, is the German community. But you know what's amazing? This community, the Kehilat Adat Yeshurun, didn't follow Rav Hirsch. It followed the Baruch Be'er Leibovitz. Over the decades, more and more of its youngsters continued their education in Lakewood, in seminaries of Beit Yaakov, and you cannot find a remnant, a little bit of Rav Hirsch's viewpoint in his own kehillah, which is sanctified and named in his memory, and Torah Derech Eretz, and all that it stands for, and all that it stood for, and its living version, is not there. It's all in Lakewood. Yeshiva University, which was 7-8 blocks away, a 5-minute walk. How many Yekis came to Yeshiva University? You can count them on the hands, on the fingers of two hands. I had a classmate, Johnny Prager. There was an older fellow in the yeshiva, Chaver Rabbi Lichtenstein, Manfred Fulda. My time just exhausted the list. Rabbi Kava, Kagilor, including the Germans. Gradual, but factual. What a development. In England, they always said about Dayan Isidore Grunfeld, he's the only true Hirschian left in the world. But in England, you have not succeeded in establishing an institution. Without a yeshiva, without an institution devoted to the ideals of Rav Hirsch, you can't succeed. You can't perpetuate it. An individual can be wonderful, great, prolific, can write, but without the ideals, in a tangible setting, you can't succeed. In Israel, one school remained loyal to Rav Hirsch. That is Cholev. That was organized by the Yekes who arrived in Israel and settled in Yerushalayim, and particularly in the Rehavia area in the 1930s. And they organized a school named in honor of his classic work on the Mitzvah Korev. And there is Torah in Derech Eretz, in the full sense of the word. There was one addendum that Rav Hirsch did not have. Rav Hirsch lived during the pre-Zionist period. Rav Zvi Hirsch one of the great rabbanim who was a precursor to religious Zionism, wrote to Rav Hirsch and asked him to join with him. And in a famous letter that was published in Askara, it was a multi-volume set in memory of the first chief rabbi of Israel, Rav Avraham Yitzchak and Cohen Cook, you will find that letter. And in the letter Rav Hirsch writes, and I quote verbatim, what you consider a great mitzvah, i.e., meaning joining Chibat Zion, religious Zionism, I consider not a small sin. Quote, end quote. The years went by, the dark clouds, the Holocaust, the change in Germany, and Chorev in Yerushalayim, which is one of the premier schools, it's Rav Hirsch. Torah, there are inheritance on the highest level, but it's a bastion of religious Zionism. Because in Israel today, there is no vestige left of that German feeling, even the Moshe, though, I have a wonderful place to live, I'm so happy here, and I'm home here. Today we know what happened. So today, anyone who has vision, anyone whose eyes are open, anyone who has a mind and an IQ above 90 embraces the land of Israel that God has returned to us, belev uvenefesh. And Chorev is included right among number one, the top, most wonderful, beautiful, inspiring institution that embodies everything positive in Torah, in the land of Israel. Back to Washington Heights. Time marches on, and during the last few years, there has been a tremendous counter-reaction. The battle has been fought on the streets of Washington Heights. I trust you know about it, but I had a big shock last night. You're isolated, but this is the world of the computer, the internet, the websites. And yet, the young man who drove me to lecture here last night, we had a conversation. And he didn't know about the Lana scandal that practically buried and destroyed one of the greatest institutions in the world, the Union of Orthodox Jewish Congregations. I had to fill him in. The New York Times knows about the Lana scandal. Didn't know. So let me take a few minutes and end off. There's a chazan, Washington Heights, Frankel. Bob Philip, wonderful. Your family is married into the family, Chili, I should say, for the people here who are at work. Chili Chili, your family is married in Nomi Rottenberg's father, Wertheimer, was the cousin for Reb Yosef Breuer. Over the years, he was succeeded by a cousin named Frankel. Frankel had a son. And I wrote it, oh boy, this gentleman is right up today. Kol HaKavod, the youngsters don't know anything, and they're sitting here telling me the things I'm about to say. Kol HaKavod. He rebelled. And he wrote a pamphlet, what has happened to our community, that instead of continuing the teachings of our great master, Rav Simcha Fourier, we're ashamed of him. We bury him under the carpet. We hide his ideas. We run to Lakewood. And they excommunicated him in popular language. He doesn't doubt in royals. Believe me, he had to go elsewhere. No one paid attention to him. It's a wonderful pamphlet. I wrote to him and told him I want 50 copies to give out to the Kollel and a few others. And then immediately, I got 100 copies, which were long since distributed. reeks in her embroidery. I believe it was, it was 200 years since the birth of Rav Hirsch. He was born 1808, 2008, a year and a half ago, right? Big simcha. And they had a sitgam kiddush. And you have to understand, as I've said, in relation to Agudat Yisrael, when the Yekes had a sitgam kiddush, this is, you know, nishkechap to nishkelap, this is Yisudat Shlomo HaMelech B'Sha'ato, with forks and proper deportment. And the person who made all the arrangements was someone named Samson Raphael Bechafa. Notice the name, Shimshin Raphael, a great, great, great grandson of Rav Shimshin Raphael Hirsch. A very successful lawyer, a Yid Talmid Chacham first rate, a Eurasian Mayan first grade, a classmate of some of my students. I mean, I know I have students who know him yet from 40 years ago. Fabulous individual. And he was chairman, and he arranged it. And he got up and gave a speech. Why have we left the traditions of Rav Hirsch? Where are we running to? To Lakewood? What type of young men are we raising? No parnasa, no knowledge of the world, no chance to make a living in dignity and honesty. I don't have to tell you how many scandals we have had. Let me not go further. I don't want even, that's why I told you at the first lecture, I do not use the word Orthodox Jew. I'm a Torah Jew. I want to be identified with what's going on in America, coast to coast. All that interest, many people in our camp, or supposedly in our camp, money and a three-letter word. I don't want to say it, begins with S and ends with X. God have mercy on us. Those are from Jews. Oh, frightened. Diane Duna just said word by word what I said. I couldn't believe it. You must have heard the wine website of my public announcement in Bruce. I can't believe it. Baruch Shekivanti or Baruch Shekivanti, word by word. What have we done to ourselves? And he gives this magnificent speech. It's time to come back to our roots and to be proud of who Rav Hirsch was. The rabbi, the new rabbi, his name is Rabbi Yisrael Mentel. I understand he's from Switzerland, etc. A Yekel, the Prophet Yichus, walked out in anger. At Shalashuris that day, at Sudash Lishit in proper Hebrew, the rabbi got up and told off this Bechafa, no great grandson of Rav Hirsch is going to tell us what to do. No lawyer is going to tell us what to do. Only the Gedol Yisrael will guide us, and their light will we walk to Lakewood, etc. That night, the man who had been president for, I understand, 20 years resigned as president of KAJ. But it's now a year and a half later, and basically nothing has changed. They go their way, there's a swing to the right. We're split, we're caught, and we lament what happened to the great heritage of Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch. So let me conclude, and I'll conclude with one little true story out of my own life to leave you with a smile. Of course, it's a very serious lecture. I apologize for the Birchat Shmuel, but Torah he l'lmodna anitzarech. Yes, Rav Hirsch was a giant. He served German Jewry. He started a movement of tshuva, of coming back. When Rabbi Yisrael Salanter came to Germany, he was overwhelmed. He said, in Europe, when a woman goes to gymnasium, she leaves the religion, fiddle around the roof. And in Germany, women are professors and doctors and dentists, and they walk with shackles in public. But life moved on, and the warmth and joy of Lithuania conquered many a German heart. And somehow, no one came up with a method to merge the two, synthesize the two. Perhaps we can have Hafiz, and we can have Slovakia. No one came up with it. Today, World War III broke out, but it came to a quick end and a total victory for Rabbi Mantel and the attitude, black is beautiful. I want to conclude with a little true story out of my own life. So a little kid in high school. My first Rebbe was Rabbi Michael Katz. You know who I'm talking about. Jerry can fill you in. I had Rebbe Michael for 2 years. Then I went in, it's my only Rebbe left alive. He should only live and be well, Rabbi Yosef Weiss. And he was a wonderful Rebbe, my third year in high school. From his class, Rebbe, I went to a college class in learning. And he was married to a mala, a great granddaughter of Rav Shimshon of all here. His father-in-law, Dr. Mala, was the president of KHA. And I was very close to Rav Weiss. And he introduced me to Rav Hirsch. When I went into college, I had to choose a language to learn. I said, I am going to learn German. Professor Ralph Rosenberg, he was there in your time too, so you're almost my age. No wonder you're falling asleep. He introduced me to Professor Ralph Rosenberg. And I, 2 years of German, I got the awards, the best student, and I translate some essay in German on Rosh Hashanah by Rav Hirsch into English. This was about 1956. That's the year that it all began. Judaism, return of English, Chorev in English, Levy's translation of the Chumash in English. My dear friends, I never used my German again. Gone and forgotten. It all came out in English. Even the gesammelte Schriften later appeared in total English. So that I've had a love affair with Rav Hirsch. I even wanted to learn the language to read him in the original, but ultimately, my Anglo heritage, which we all share, despite the fact that we threw your tea into the harbor in Boston, that is what lives on. Let me just say one other word. Tomorrow, I'm lecturing on Yeshiva University, and Thursday, I'm tying it all together. Shabbos, I'm giving a drasha to one of you in the yard, whatever Chili will lead me by the nose, but I just want to tell you in advance, this is a drasha that if I gave you a cola, it would cost each student $36,000 to the IOU list to get in, just to get the one Maimah Chazal I'm going to reveal. Now, I'm telling you in advance, those of you who are religious Zionists will love me to the end of days. And those of you who are not religious Zionists are going to suffer to the end of days. So decide whether or not you want to hear the Shrusha. Until we meet again in health and happiness, my dear students, thus the Dhamma.
It is just in 1 second.